Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I am not going to lie, this episode's guest, Scott Grace, kept me on my toes. Between him introducing himself through poetry and then pulling out his guitar in the middle and singing me a little song, well, I've never seen anything like it. And that's the reason that I kind of love it. Now, Scott is known by many things. He's a mindful masculinity coach. He's an author. He's a comedian. He's obviously an entertainer, but he's also known as the spiritual Dr. Seuss. And, you know, I say that, and automatically, you think poetry, right? And you're not wrong. Like I said before, he finishes the episode out with poetry as well. But what Scott is saying through these poems and how he's doing it, well, that's where the magic lies. And that's kind of where the miracle is, because his poems are distilled, potent, beautiful, reminiscings, musings, sharings that might just alter the way you view the world. Now, on his website, he does say that Scott Grace has been described as a cross between John Denver, Robin Williams, and Dr. Seuss, and is wanted by the authorities for creating the piece as well as defying the law of gravity with levity. So here we go. Here's another episode of the podcast, and you'll hear me try to keep up with Scott. And I was more or less successful, but I'll let you be the judges of that. Here's Scott Grace.
I said to the universe, I want help. I do not want to lift these heavy weights and take them on the train, go back to New York City. I refuse to believe anymore that God wants me to lift these heavy weights, that if there's any reason, like it must be coming from a sense of unworthiness that I struggle this hard. Not everyone struggles so much.
Excited to get to know you, Scott. I have been watching you on social media, kind of getting a bird's eye view of who you are. But every time I have someone on the show, I ask them, how do you self-describe? Who are you as a human being? I'd love for you to share that.
I would love to. But Kirsten, please stop following me. I get paranoid when I think I'm being followed.
Sorry.
And it's okay. You can do it on social media, but all right. So anyway, who am I? But that usually implies going back in time and sharing a little bit of my history. And I'm not a big fan of my history. But I will say that I wrote a little bit of a poem about my history. And so I'll just share some of that. I was born at a young age. In 1963, survived the streets of Brooklyn and my noisy family. My parents thought God was a scam. Religion was for saps. For me, that meant no Hebrew school, and I thanked God for that. No Hanukkah, no Christmas trees, no holy holidays. When we gathered for a meal for grace, we said, "Oy vey." I was schooled in logic, learned hard science, and knew math. I had some signs of ADD and couldn't sit still in class. I took 2 years of college and then called it graduation. You could say I left to find a higher education. I became a spiritual seeker, meditation, LSD. I did breath work, got real high, and met with God drug free. My parents were beside themselves. Oh, where did we go wrong? Our son has got religion. Well, At least he's not reborn. I didn't join a church or pass pamphlets door to door. I learned to mind my mind so it wouldn't mind my store. I took the latest workshops and expensive weekend trainings. I paid for Tony Robbins to say, Scott, just quit complaining. I did my daily practices and found some peace and power. I started writing happy songs and singing in the shower. Some friends who overheard me asked, why don't you make a tape? Your music will help many folks rejoice and celebrate. And so I went from shower to the studio and stage. I freed up the performer who'd been locked inside a cage. My music brought me so much joy and even brought me money. I left the day job, moved out west to where it's much more sunny. I made CDs. The word caught on till I was quite sought after. There's nothing like a message that is sent in song and laughter. At home, I learned my lessons just like everybody else. I learned to love another. I first got to love myself. I grew through my relationships, the land of Mars and Venus. I learned to listen to my heart, not just my head and penis. For a while, I journeyed with a mate. We raised a child together. We learned that we can choose to love in any kind of weather. Sometimes when our fears collided, we got out of joint. We pointed fingers at each other and truly missed the point. Yet in the midst of challenges, we've learned to stay friends, to welcome different points of view and not judge or defend. A fighting Brooklyn boy can grow to be a gentleman when he gives up being right and seeks to understand. And that's what I've learned out in the Sunshine State. It's best to battle with my ego, not with my mate. Yeah, that is what I've learned in all these years I've told you of. I'd rather lose an argument and win at choosing love. I'd rather drop all arguments and join with you in love.
Okay, I have to say, you are the first guest I've had, and I've interviewed probably over 250 people that has introduced themselves like that. And I love it because you told a gorgeous story of your life. I loved the rhyme, the rhythm. Really, really beautiful. Thank you. I'm curious, when you were a kid, did you have any sense that you were creative or that you were going to go on the stage?
I did. In fifth grade, I was playing the violin. I was pretty good at it. And the teacher who directed a school play, A Fiddler on the Roof, asked me if I would play the whole score with the piano player and sit on this artificial roof. And I rehearsed with them and I did it. And it was the first time I was ever on a stage. And I just noticed I never felt so good. And I never felt so seen and appreciated. And, you know, my parents and my sisters were in the audience and everybody was so proud and cheering me on. So that was my first taste. And it was like cocaine or something. And I just kept going. That was music. But then I joined a poetry club. And I was just like, wow, this is the best feeling. I like this feeling better than anything I've ever had before. And so I kept going with it. I wrote for the school newspapers in high school, I got in radical trouble. I got kicked out of graduation for co-conspiring with my friends to create an underground satiristic newspaper that badmouthed the principal and all these different things. And it was like a school newspaper. So the newspaper was called Catnip. My first song I ever wrote was in like fifth grade, and I got in trouble for passing it around the class. And it was a satire on Strangers in the Night. And it was strangers in the night exchanging glances. If the girl looks right, you'll make advances. Don't wear your pants too tight, you'll never get them off. So,
That was fifth grade.
something like that. I was really young, and so my creativity kept going. And it was always funny. It was always, like kind of risky. And then I found myself in 1986 living in a Course in Miracles study community. So this is a spiritual text, if those of you that don't know it. And I was still just writing funny songs. And one of the people there gave me a psychic reading. And she said, we see your music going deeper, getting more serious. And I couldn't even conceive of being serious at the time. It was like saying to Weird Al Yankovic, you're going to write ballads, you know? So anyway, she was right. And I started getting deeper and deeper as I grew as a person. I had more access to my feelings, and then I was able to write more deeper. And then I went on to write books and give talks, and here I am. Hopefully having earned your trust,
Oh,
Kirsten.
absolutely. Yes, and you're also known as the spiritual Dr. Seuss. How much do you love
Absolutely.
being known that as that?
I love it so much that I'm willing to change it. I'm moving into more mainstream, and the poems, and I'll share one, I'd be happy to share one later. The poems are not just messages for people who identify as spiritual. They have a universal appeal. They're just as important for atheists and agnostics as whatever. So I'm actually being coached right now to change the name to something like the Dr. Seuss for Adults or the Dr. Seuss for Adults. Or for grown-ups who keep growing up. Oh, that sounds a little long.
You
So
need a
anyway,
good
whatever.
tagline.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean,
Let's talk after class. Maybe you have some
right.
ideas for
Let's
me.
talk after class. First of all, I just want to address your high school hijinks. And I have to say that,
Please do.
when I was in high school, which was the 80s, I did have a classmate. Computers were relatively new in my school. They were getting them district wide at that point. It was like a really big deal. So they put together this kind of booklet for all the teachers and educators if they had questions about how to operate the computers. And I had a really good friend who was an incredible artist. I mean, just so gifted. And they asked him to design the front of the book, this that was going out to everybody. And he had it was a picture or a drawing of a computer with some, it looked like just bytes on it, like language, but you didn't know what it said. And then we found out, like a month or two later, after this had gone out to the entire district, that he had quite subversively, it really read backwards as "bite me," and
And that turned into the name of your podcast.
exactly. That's
Oh,
exactly where my podcast came from. But I just thought,
how romantic.
Those were simpler times back then, where you could write a paper like catnip and have it be really fun and irreverent. And so I wanted to ask about catnip. When you worked on it, how did you figure out what to write about? Like, what the article about the Pope, was that in response to something?
Yeah. At the time, the Pope was in the papers, and it was a Pope that was not very socially conscious. You know, he was going overboard with the old dogmatic ways of Christianity. So he needed satire. So, you know, what we do is we look at people who take themselves too seriously and have very rigid dogmatic views, and they're ripe for satire. You can't satirize, let's say, George Carlin. You know, he's already satirizing the culture. But people who take themselves too seriously are ripe. I want to tell you, this is so fun for me. I've been on 50 podcasts. I've never told stories about my high school days. And they're like airplanes that are now getting excited because the air traffic controller is saying, hey, you guys can come in too. So I'm going to tell you two more stories. I was bored. I was a bored high school student. My bus got to school about 20 minutes earlier than most of the kids. And I was like, what do? I don't know. You know, ADHD. So I brought a rag and some Windex, you know, a glass cleaner one day. And as the teachers' cars were coming in, I was there. And I said, and then I did their windows like I was supposed to do their, like, you know, it's part of school. And I just watched the reactions. You know, one teacher said, can you come to my house on Saturday? You know, it was just so much fun to step outside the norm. Another time, I don't know how the hell this happened, but I got one of those carts that goes into like science class. And I put my friend who was willing to do this on top, and I dressed him up in a laboratory smock. And I directed him. I said, pretend you're not a human. Pretend you're something other than human and do movements like this and keep a straight face no matter what. And we found that our science teacher had he had a substitute. He was sick, so he had a substitute. So it was this like young woman who hadn't really had any experience. And I walked into her class with my friend on the cart, and he's doing this. And she said, and I waited for her reaction. I had like absurdly good comic timing for a kid. And she said, what is this? And I said, I don't know, lady, is this room 132, the science lab? And she said, yes. And I said, this is all I know. Somebody from this room ordered this. I'm just delivering it. And my friend's going like this, and the class is cracking up. I'm 61 years old, and I think I've finally arrived at a time where I am unwilling to use my talent to hurt anybody. You know, like she didn't know what how to respond to that. And it probably was very embarrassing and shaming for her in front of the kids. So I did stuff like that for a long time. And now I only use my comic chops to uplift and to create mindfulness, to use comedy to create mindfulness rather than attack or express anger.
And I'd so appreciate you talking about mindful masculinity and what that is and how you arrived at it. I'd love to hear that story.
Oh, it's a story. Yeah. So during COVID, my touring, the things I was doing for money had really dried up. And I wasn't savvy or willing to take my gifts onto the internet. So I got a job, and I was doing data entry and customer service for a company called Man Cave America. And the boss, the owner of the company, without me asking him to, read one of my books. And I don't know how he found it, but he read the whole thing on an airplane ride. And he came back and said, "Scott, you're a writer. You're really good. I want you to start writing some essays about masculinity." And it's a Bay Area tech company, but he called it Man Cave America. And he revealed to me that he had some really like a deep exploration. He was very curious. What is masculinity? What is, you know, he had been wounded, as many men have, by the idea that there's toxic masculinity and that so many men start apologizing for their masculine energy. And so he gave me a list of topics to write about, and I wrote about them. And I think I got really excited and said to him, "Henry, I think there's a book here." And he started to, get excited. And he ended up publishing the book, paying me to write it. So this job that I got just for money turned into a big part of my life purpose.
It's really remarkable to be seen by someone and seen for your skills and your talents, and to have them go ahead and say, "I want to support you. I want to bring you and the way you think, the way you write out into the world." I mean, it's actually, that's an incredible story. And how generous of Henry, generosity of spirit. That's
Goodness. Yeah. He's a really devoted Christian. Yeah, you know, it's a very small business, and the fact that he paid me and continues to pay me, he sees it the way like people tithe 10% to their church or spiritual cause. He sees hiring me and having me on the staff as his tithe. Like, and he's very proud of the book. He has a huge big poster on his office wall of the book, and we're constantly checking. He's like watching all the podcasts. And so he takes it personally. And I love that.
That's incredible. Well, I would love to ask you, when you were writing this book, when you were putting it together, what was one of the most kind of maybe shocking things you discovered about masculinity in the world?
The biggest shocking thing was that I wasn't a screw up. As a man, I had walked through my life feeling really ashamed of my lack of traditional masculinity. I even felt shame for my huge biceps. I mean, lack of biceps. I mean, you know, like I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And as I wrote the book, I really realized that I was part of a new evolution of manhood, and that my masculinity wasn't defined by tradition. It was defined by my courage, my willingness to step through my fears. And just like it takes a lot of juju, a lot of masculine courage for, let's say, a bodybuilder to keep putting on those weights and pushing past his limits, I did the same thing, but my gym was my creativity and my willingness to step out of my comfort zone emotionally. So I realized through writing the book that I had something to say about masculinity, something valuable to men and to women. And as I say in the book, to those that defy those two categories, because everything's changing so quickly right now. It's pretty crazy, especially if you're holding on to the old.
It's so true. I mean, things are shifting, and they're shifting really, really rapidly. And I think, there's this massive culture, social war especially in the US, you know, I'm probably all over the world, but in the US, between what quote unquote traditional masculinity looks like and this kind of new iteration, this new evolution of masculinity. And I think I do agree with you that change is difficult and it can be painful for some people. And a lot of people don't like change. I mean, sometimes I grumble when there's change. But this is a really sensitive topic because it goes right to identity. And most people, you know, go through their lives not even trying to figure out who they are, what they like, or what makes them happy. It's a really powerful topic that you've taken on. And I'm grateful that it's in the world because we need to have these conversations.
Absolutely. You know, the fear of change. This is stereotypical and it's not 100% true, but it's harder for a man to change because his conditioning is, I'm not supposed to be afraid. I'm not supposed to show fear. I'm not supposed to admit fear. And since change is frightening for everyone, a man more might avoid change more than a woman. So when I started massive change, which was 1994, I wrote a song about what I was going through. And it really speaks to men, but all of us, when we start committing to change or just have life be so intense that it brings us to our knees. I was so... a storyline. Life is rough, so get tough. Go out and take what is mine. Stay in control. Get the upper hand. Show no fear. Cry no tear. Learn to be Superman. Now that story is burning, blowing up in smoke. I can't live it any longer, 'cause I'm being choked. In the pitch black night, I'm looking for my heart. The light may be coming, but I'm still in the dark. Moving out the old, bringing in the new, and walking through the fire between the two. Moving out the old, bringing in the new, walking through the fire between the two. That's just the beginning, but boy, I'm too excited to get to one of my Dr. Seuss poems to finish that song.
Do it. I'm here for it.
All right. All right. So you had said in our pre-conversation that one of the questions you would rather not miss asking me was... Can you ask it?
Oh, yeah. I'd love for you to share a story or more than one, or stories of something that happened in your life or something you encountered or witnessed that you felt was magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
What a question. I'm sure your podcasts are never boring if you ask that question. I would say this. One story leading to one of the poems. So I'm going to guess it's about 20 years ago. I lived in California, but I went to the East Coast every May, spent 4 to 6 weeks touring up and down. At that point, I was writing, selling books and CDs. And so my suitcases were filled not just with clothes and toiletries, but with books and CDs. And I was getting older, you know, like I used to travel with public transportation and it was getting harder and harder. So I was looking forward to selling a lot of my stuff the first weekend, which I co-created, co-facilitated a weekend workshop with my friends Joyce and Barry Vassell, relationships. And so, for once in 25 years, I didn't sell much at all. And so on Monday morning, everybody's getting ready to leave. I packed my bags and I picked them up. And there was something inside me that said, you can't do this anymore. Just no more. And I said to the universe, I want help. I do not want to lift these heavy weights and take them on the train, go back to New York City. I do not want to do, I can't, I do, I refuse to believe anymore that God wants me to lift these heavy weights, that if there's any reason, like it must be coming from a sense of unworthiness that I struggle this hard. Not everyone struggles so much. So I said, okay, I don't know how it's going to happen, but get me to New York City without me having to hurt my back. Boom, released it, sent it to the universe. Walked into the workshop. People are saying goodbye and getting ready for our last session. And somebody just casually comes up to me and says, so where are you off to next, Scott? And I said, New York City. He said, oh, that's interesting. Where in New York City? And I said, Midtown 66, West Side 66, between Columbus and Amsterdam. And he said, what? That's where we live. That's where we're going. And I said, in a car? And he said, yeah. You know, do you want a lift? I'm like, please? Not only did he give me a lift, but he took the bags and put them in his trunk. And he lived in the same building as where I was going. And he took the bags and took them to the door. So from that experience, I had I was inspired to write another Dr. Seuss poem. I had written about four since my daughter was born, and I had been reading her Dr. Seuss, and I started thinking like Dr. Seuss, and then I realized these are pretty profound rhymes. This is not your typical Dr. Seuss. And I went to the computer, and I over a period of years wrote at that point four, and this next one I think is my all-time favorite. And it came out of that experience of dropping my bags, trusting the universe, and letting myself be carried to my highest good. So get in your pajamas. Let's gather and snuggle. And I'll tell you a story. The story of struggle. It begins at a time before struggle began, in a garden called Easy, where all things were grand. The people who tended the garden had fun. They prospered and played and got lots of things done. One day, two plain folks, call them Adam and Eve, went under their covers with shame and some leaves. And then came the blame game, the who cut the cheese? Was it Eve or a snake or the wrong choice of trees? The day-to-day play, all the joy they were given, gave way to the sense we must work for a living. And God did reply, kids, you gotta be hidden. Everything you could want is right here, not forbidden. But they would not, they could not receive the good news. They thought that to play they must first pay their dues. By the sweat of thy brow we must now earn our bread. They didn't know the gluten had gone to their heads. Then they passed this confusion right on to their kids, hiding their loins with more leaves from more figs, teaching their offspring original sin, who then passed it off to their nextest of kin. And they made their cause noble. They justified pain. To suffer's God's will. No pain means no gain. And if you have struggled through life unabated, When you croak, your rewards card will be activated. That's when you cash in all your hard sacrifices and rest up in heaven with the rest of the righteous. And so, human beings, we assumed the position of forgetting God's love didn't come with conditions. We dreamed up a God with a list of demands, with rules and with judgments and a whip in his hands. And over the seas came the pure Puritans to spread the work ethic all over the land. The pleasures of life must not ever be trusted. If you dare enjoy sex, you're eternally busted. God sits on a cloud with his only son, and they both wear a frown if you have too much fun. But if you can grab a bull by its horns, well, then God is pleased and might send less shit storms. And then on your tomb, your tribute will say, she worked hard for the money and toiled each day. He played by the rules, never did make a scene. And here lies his body along with his dreams. Most folks are not dead yet, just taking a snooze, asleep at the wheel, driven by their to-dos. The average adult has a list that won't stop. And to be who you are is just not near the top. But when your to-bes become priorities, you could fly through to-dos with the greatest of ease. But if your to-dos make to-bes disappear, you get caught in to-do-dos right up to your ears. So what is this thing called struggling? Allow me to define it, this world-famous thing. It's trying and trying and trying so hard with your own ego's strength that is no match for God's. You're doing your best, and it's very courageous, but I'll do it myself is not self-advantageous. Yet when you join hands with the powers that be, your source takes the lead and she leads you for free. By now, are you thinking, enough is enough. There's life beyond struggle. I just gotta trust. Well, woohoo! You're ready to drop that belief and reclaim what's under your famous fig leaf. Under your cover, there's nothing to hide. That slippery serpent's been speaking some jive. We don't work for a living. We're already alive. We're not human doings. We're beings born to thrive. So take out your cell phone to send out a text to your family, your friends, all your loved nervous wrecks. And tell them their nerves need no longer be taxed. They can travel downstream and be much more relaxed. And if they say, hey, that just makes me afraid, because lazy don't pay me, there's bills to be paid. Let them see easy does it's been working for you, that your life has your back and your trust sees you through. And if they say, no way, Jose, that's just fine. Not everyone's hip to the trip, they're divine. But everyone gets there in their own sweet time. And you help them the most by staying aligned. I'm staying aligned, staying aligned. I'm staying aligned. Don't worry, we're almost done. And so, when your isness becomes your main business, you feel just like Santa, the Eve before Christmas. so much to give and so much to receive. And it happens as easy as breath when you breathe. Because the breath breathes itself with no push and no shove. So goes your life when you know that you're loved. And if you work hard and do work up a sweat, it's only because you so love getting wet. Because when you're inspired, you follow your bliss. Even when you perspire, it feels effortless, like the work that you're doing is being through you. And you're thrilled to be letting the universe do you. Please email this poem, although some will delete it, and post it on Facebook and on Twitter. Tweet it, because millions are ready to hear the good news that struggle is a choice that you don't have to choose. And struggle-free living, oh, how we love it. We flow down the stream on the boat, easy does it. And easy does do it. We find out at last. We don't stop at the tolls. We just use easy path. I have one final message, and then I must go. You can't give up struggle completely, you know. There are rites of passages, powerful rites, where struggle's a part of you birthing more life. I tried reading this poem to a woman in labor. She said, out of my face, don't do me no favors. Our struggles are sometimes endearingly human. They spice up our life like fresh garlic or cumin. I gotta get go now. I'm feeling spent. But let's sacrifice struggle this Easter for Lent. Or just do it now. Why procrastinate when the garden of ease is our natural state? It's been waiting with patience, and it's well worth the wait. The garden of ease is our natural state. It's everyone's birthright and everyone's fate. The garden of ease. It's our natural state. The end.
Wow. Okay. Beautiful. Lots of good reminders for myself. And may I ask you, because you're just so great. It's so effortless. The way it comes out, it's just so beautiful. How long did it take for you to create this work of art?
Two months. It's an automatic transmission. I'm just receiving. And then the second part is, it seems to be over, but it needs a lot of editing and crafting. It's like first the right brain has this dump, and then the left brain says, okay, thank you, this needs work. And I share it with friends, and I get feedback. The whole part about you can't give up struggle completely. There are rites of passages. I read this poem to a woman in labor. That whole thing came after getting feedback from my friends that said the one thing that they thought, hey, this is brilliant, but it makes me feel like there's something wrong with me because I'm still struggling. And I thought, wow, that's a really good point. And I certainly am still struggling at times. And so I can really relate to it. So I wrote in that part to have some empathy and acceptance for struggling as having it's a good teacher until it's not.
Oh, yeah. And I really appreciated the part where you said that struggle can birth us into new ways of being and new paths. And I think that's really important to understand. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it's the contractions for something that wants to be born. Not everyone goes with that metaphor. You know, some people, they use their struggling to further validate that they're a victim and that life is against them, and they shrink from growth and expansion. And I do that as well. It's, you know, like I'm in the middle of an invitation to expand to a wider audience, and it's freaking me out, and I'm procrastinating. But I'm aware that that's my next assignment, and eventually, I'm taking baby steps. I'll get there.
Well, and thank you for articulating it as an invitation. Struggle is an invitation to, yes, it might suck. Yes, you might cry. Yes, you can complain. You can complain when you're going through struggle. You can share it with a friend so the burden isn't as heavy, but it's also an offer to like level up to another level, to go to another place that's more beautiful, where maybe you can get more done or become more of a force of power in the world for good. Yeah, struggle sucks. I'm not saying that it's great, you know, but I do find, at least for myself, that it's usually for my benefit.
Yep. Story's not over until there's a happy.
Yes, I do. I am a fan of the happy ending. They're different for everybody, but then I think then there will be another invitation down the road.
Right. And for some people, it's in their next life, you know, like the story ain't over. There's no over.
So how did you really think I did? I tried to keep up, but I don't think I was entirely successful. And I think that's because Scott is so his own individual human being, so his own person, so filled with creativity, and is so smart and inspired that I think it would take an act of God for someone to truly keep up with him. Now, as I said, all the links to Scott's various inspirings and fabulosity will be in the episode show notes. And there's a really sweet Easter egg at the end of this where I kind of inspire Scott. And I feel really good about myself, and I'm giving myself a pat on the back. It's not every day that we learn a new word, and so I'm trying to sprinkle it in as much as possible. I'll let you listen to the Easter egg to figure out which word that is. But until then, please do check out Scott's work, who he is in the world, and how he's leading the way to inspire others all across the globe. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks for meeting and spending the time with yet another incredible human being who's creating positive change in this world. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Scott. I mean, be your own unique self. Be who you are. Bring beauty to the world. Bring mayhem to the world. Bring poetry to the world. Bring improv to the world. Bring problem solving to the world. Bring hope to the world. Because honestly, I think Scott is doing all of this and more. You don't have to do all of it, of course, but bring something fabulous to the world. Give the world your fabulosity, your uniqueness, your inspired beauty. I'll see you next week for another episode of the podcast. Until then, I hope your world is filled with grace, with dancing that maybe doesn't hurt your knees, and with laughter with strangers who've already become your friends.
Are we still recording right now?
Like, oh, I just, you know, no. I mean, we finished, but I always hit record at the end. Okay. I do a lot of editing on my podcasts. So
I would just ask that we cover where people can get a hold of me.
Oh, find yeah. My books. Absolutely. Okay. Go for it.
So if anyone who's been touched by this would like to know more about me and stay connected to what I do, you can go to www.scottsongs.com, scottsongs.com. Read all about my offerings. As you scroll down the homepage, you'll see my books, and you can click on them. They'll take you to purchase. I would recommend the Audible for Mindful Masculinity. I add 3 hours of bonus music and poetry. So it's a big deal. And I think there's 8 hours of entertainment and inspiration. And that's all I got to say about it.
I love it.
And no, there's Facebook and there's YouTube, blah, yeah, blah, blah. Course.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
And I'll have links for all of that too in the show notes so people can click on through too to your YouTube and your fabulosities.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulosities. Is that a word?
I
like it.
I made it up.
Can I adopt it?
You may adopt it. Yes, 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 yes.
Fabulosity.
There you go.
Oh. It's like, it sounds a little bit to me like unforgettable. Like,
yeah.
Fabulosity in every way. Fabulosity, your show is great. Bite-sized blessings. It's incredible. How simply unforgettable my time with Christian and her audience too.
Woohoo! Amazing. Oh, Scott, thank you. Thank you.
Amazing Scott Grace.
That's right.
How sweet. How sweet.